Hello, I'm Michaela Maguire, Artistic Director of Melbourne Writers Festival. You're listening to a conversation from our 2021 podcast series, which is supported by the Copyright Agency's Cultural Fund.
Welcome to the Melbourne Writers Festival podcast. My name is Shelley Ware and I'm a proud Yankunjara Wirangu woman from South Australia living in Victoria on the lands of the people of the Kulin Nation. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which you listen and learn today. I pay my respects to all elders past and present and their families and to all other Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people listening today. We are in for a treat of the soul, mind and heart today with our special guest, a proud Torres Strait Islander man born on Larrakia land, author and activist Thomas Mayer. He is here today to tell us all about his new book, Dear Son, a collection of letters and reflections written by First Nations fathers and sons. Hello, Thomas. Welcome. How are you?
Hello, Shelley. I'm good, thank you. Happy to be here with you.
Oh, pleasure. The pleasure's all mine. Now, your new book, Dear Son, is a collection of letters and reflections from First Nations fathers and sons. What or who inspired you to write and create this book?
Well, the idea actually came from Tara June Winch. I met her at the Perth Writers Festival back in just before COVID. And, you know, we had a good yarn about family and about, you know, mob and all the rest. And she, you know, I was talking about my own family. I've got five kids and, you know, across a couple of different generations, my eldest is 24-year-old and my youngest is 7-year-old now. And she suggested to me that I'd be perfect to write a book about fatherhood. And we talked about what an important thing that would be to do. I didn't think that I would do it. You know, with all my flaws as a man and as a father and mistakes that I've made and all that sort of stuff, and knowing that it would be a deeply personal thing to do, you know, I'd need to think about my relationship with my own father and how I would do it, you know, was a big question as well, you know, as far as what form the book would take and structure. And but after a couple of months of thinking about it, I got in touch with Tara and I said, I think I'm going to do it. And I was inspired when I had read James Baldwin's, you know, epistolary letter to his nephew, which was in The Fire Next Time. And that sort of sparked my mind. I thought, this is how you could write a book about fatherhood. Yeah, that's where it came from.
Oh, I love that. I love that. It's been a bit of a journey and getting together and, you know, someone inspiring you. It's always nice when there's someone else to bounce off with in that. But in your foreword, you said in your very first sentence, there is no shame here. Can you explain to our listeners why this sentence was so important to lead with?
Yeah, well, it's because I think there is this, and it's in the opening of my letter to my son, the first letter in the book, this shame to express our emotions and to tell our sons or our fathers how we love them. And, you know, I think that was an important way to start the book, to frame it as in it's time to get over this shame about expressing our love for each other. And that's what we'll do in this book.
Well, you certainly have done that. Now, it's not only a beautiful book to read, but it's also beautiful to hold and grasp as the emotions become quite real and often sometimes quite confronting. Reading your letter you wrote to your son on your ideas of manhood and fatherhood and how they've changed over time, as a father here today, tell me what it means to you to be a father and a man.
I think it's about nurturing my children. I think it's about being there for them and loving them, you know. My first three kids, I was a single father for a couple of years, so I consciously made sure I gave what I thought were motherly hugs to my kids and all that. And, you know, I even wrote that when I wrote the first draft of the letter and sort of woke up to myself and, like, this isn't really a thing about being motherly. This is something that parents should do and family should do. And, you know, so I think, you know, I think it's really about showing love to our children openly and being there for them.
And this is something that you've learnt along the way as a father, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, I'm a lot more relaxed the second time round, and I think that's been part of the journey as well, where I was stressed about you know, the kids doing well in school. I mean, of course you want your kids, but you know, the little things like if they were getting A's, for example, and all that, I've learned that, you know, they find their own way in their own ways, and, you know, as long as you're there to support them, they will find their way, you know. Give them that guidance and someone to fall back on to give them a hug, and they get through.
For sure. And you're also challenging people's definition of masculinity in the book. So what does masculinity look like to you?
Well, when I was growing up, certainly, you know, playing footy, and from what I learned from father figures and other men, there was a culture that was more like toxic masculinity. The homophobia, you know, the jokes that we made, the sexism, misogyny, it was something that was you know, fairly normal growing up, and still, unfortunately, in Australian society today, it's pervasive and it needs to change. And this, I thought it was really important in this book for this to be what we discuss as all men that are authors of these letters, to talk about that poor behaviour, that that culture of toxic masculinity that needs to change in this book.
Sure does need to change. Couldn't agree with you more. And as a First Nations people, stereotypes that others have on our men can often be quite harmful and debilitating. Now, your book challenges these stereotypes and brings the real hearts of our men to light, a side of our men often missed by the wider community. What would this book have meant to you as a young man and young father?
There's just so many great lessons in this book. It would have meant a lot. It would have meant a lot to me to read this book when I was a young man, you know, with all those poor behaviours. And, I mean, this book came out in 1st of September, and the response already from quite a few young men that, you know, that the woman in their lives have actually put this book into their hands after reading it themselves, the response has been great. You know, it's just, you know, guys saying to me, "Thomas, reading your book, I'm going to get in touch with my father and I'm going to address, you know, these issues in our relationship," or fathers saying to me, you know, I've really thought about how I'm guiding my son and leading by example. You know, this is just such a wonderful outcome. I would have loved to have this book when I was young, certainly.
Yeah, I've read it just this week, and I can certainly tell you my husband will be reading it. And I've read some of the letters to my son as well, and we've had quite great discussions about what it means to be a young man and to be a father. So it's been a special gift to me as well, because my father passed away 20 years ago. So I feel like a lot of his words are in this book that I can share with my son. So it's been a real treasure to be able to pass on First Nation voices to him in that way. So
I'm that's really amazing. How old is your son?
He's 15.
15, yeah. I think it's a gentle enough. All of the letters are, I mean, they're to the point, and they address all of these issues, and they don't hide from the emotions. You know, there's a great vulnerability that these authors have all offered, but at the same time, I think it's gentle enough for, you know, teenagers, you know, middle school children to read and learn from as well.
Oh, 100%. And especially the toxic masculinity that you've talked about that is still quite prevalent in their lives, to be able to hear the gentleness and hear men say that that wasn't the way I should have done it, that I made some mistakes and this is how I'd like to move forward. So it's been really special to be able to share this with him. Now, you have actually some of my favourite men on the planet writing letters in this book of yours. How did you choose these 12 men, and share with me some of the author's reactions to being asked to write this letter?
Well, I wanted men with something to tell that was important to anyone that read it. You know, I wanted to ensure also that there was, you know, a variety of areas covered, you know, across this huge continent. That was another factor. The first thing I did when I decided to write this book was I began to draft my own letter to my eldest son. His name is Tinoi. And he's, you know, he was only around 19 at the time. And I used that draft letter once I completed that to show the men that I invited what I wanted them to do. You know, of course, I stressed I didn't want them to copy what I did. They didn't need to do the same structure. They didn't need to cover the same subjects. But I wanted to demonstrate to them just how honest I wanted them to be, you know, about their lives and you know, their relationship with their sons and their fathers. And it was all of the men that I invited that accepted it were, you know, immediately said that they wanted to do it. Interestingly, Noel Pearson was going to be one of the authors in this, and but his it was a sort of like he spilled coffee on his laptop and lost the draft.
Oh no!
We were waiting for his piece. You know, he was the last piece that we were waiting for, and it was genuine. You know, because I saw the correspondence with the tech people trying to save it. You know, I was so disappointed that we didn't get that one.
But, oh no.
But, you know, like him and others said halfway through the process just how difficult they were finding it just because of the, you know, the raw emotion of writing so honestly about yourself and your relationship with your children or your father. And, you know, it's a really generous thing that these men have done.
It sure is. You certainly get a sense of how important connection to family and spirit and self and community and culture and country is to all of these men, and how they wanted to pass it on to their loves through their lived experience, wisdom and love. What was it like when you got all of their letters finished and you got to read them?
You know, just a sense of pride, I think, is the best way to explain it. You know, not so much pride in the book itself, but pride in the fellas for what they had achieved, you know. I mean, some of these guys, as you know, are great writers already, Stan Grant and Jack Lattimore, but some have never written anything like this before.
Yeah.
Some had never written a letter to anyone before, you know. And, yeah, just a real sense of pride that these guys had transferred so much knowledge and given themselves to the world, really, through these pages.
They sure have. And throughout the letters and reflections, you hear just how past government policies have impacted First Nations peoples. And in reading your beautiful letter to your son, I learned something new that I actually didn't know, and that was that the Queensland's Aboriginal Protection Act was a blueprint for South Africa's apartheid, and have since spent hours actually researching it myself. So not are we only learning life lessons from these men who have bared their heart and soul, we're also going on a journey of truth-telling of this country's true history. You said that you sent your letter in. Do you think that was a purpose flow, or do you think this just happened naturally as men talked about their lives and how they'd been affected?
Yeah, I think it was a natural thing. Because when we talk about the mistakes that we've made, the behaviours of ourselves or our fathers, you know, the social issues, you cannot talk about those things without explaining to our children why, you know, we are in this situation. You know, just what sort of effect the intergenerational trauma has had on their parents, you know, myself, and then how this is important to understand, because but to understand it is how we can defeat it, you know, and improve the next generation and the next generation of men. And, you know, and I think that is, you know, what we are overcoming has been by design, you know, and, you know, the South African example, how it learnt from, you know, just how awful the state of Queensland was to Indigenous people, you know, it was purposeful the way that Indigenous men have been demonised and disempowered. Yeah. And that is only, you know, it was done to be able to not only steal our land but to exploit us and our women and our families and keep us in segregation. And, you know, this is something that we must talk about when we talk about our issues.
Couldn't agree more with you. And I loved how Stan Grant spoke of language and its importance as he yelled it out of his car window as he drove past the hospital that he was unable to visit during COVID, finding that he was saying to us that it was going to find his father's ears and his soul, because he knew that once he yelled it out the window, that he would continue to fight like a Wurundjeri elder. So these intimate moments shared in these letters, what was one that impacted you that moving you forward you'll take with you?
I love Stan Grant's letter. It's such a beautifully written letter, and it was like pretty much done on the first draft. You know, that's how great a writer he is. I think my favourite letter, though, was Yessie Mosby. Yessie is a Musig, Torres Strait Islander, Kalkagul Nation, Central Island. And he writes about, it's just so heartbreaking. First he talks about culture and his boys and, the protocol or the cultural process of becoming a man and a leader in community. Then he talks about how it's his obligation to fight to save their island because of climate change and climate inaction and the way that seas are rising and how they're picking up the bones off the beach of their ancestors, like they were shells, strewn across the beach as these waters are starting to take, these low-lying islands. And, Yessie's got a really wonderful way with words. If you ever listen to him talk about, he's one of the Torres Strait Eight that have taken the Australian government a complaint to the United Nations about climate inaction. And it's a really powerful letter.
Oh, that is one I haven't read, and I actually will get off this podcast and I'll make sure that I read it straight away. I have to brace myself for the emotion of that one. I think it takes a little bit out of your soul each letter and adds so much more each time as well, which is, balances out that cup in your heart for sure. Now, you spoke about one of your regrets being telling your son when he was 9 not to hold your hand, but you've learned that this is not so, and you ended the letter with the words that you couldn't wait to see him and that you would hold his hand and you would talk man to man. Have you had this moment together yet?
Yeah, we have, yeah.
Beautiful.
From the first draft, my son read it with me, and, I thought it was important to do that. And, it was just really a special moment, with my son. Basically, we wrote the letter together in a lot of ways. And, he's doing well. He's 21 now and he's working, doing an apprenticeship, so I'm really proud of him.
Wow, beautiful. What about the other men when they finally got to read the letters with their sons? Have they shared with you anything that happened in those moments?
Yeah. They same thing, lots of tears, all of the emotions. And I think one of the most special moments soon after it was released was Brian Little, who's a journalist at NITV, young Ryan. His father wrote a letter to him and his brothers, and his father's Johnny Little, from Central Australia. And so on NITV, Johnny read the letter to Brian for the first time.
Oh, wow.
Oh, it was so beautiful. Unfortunately, because of COVID, they couldn't be together, but they did it via Zoom, and it was still just as moving.
Oh, that I'm going to have to find that too. That sounds absolutely beautiful. So do you believe that your book, Dear Son, will change, or do you hope and believe that your book, Dear Son, will change the conversations men are having with their sons?
Yeah, because I've seen it in action already. It was my hope. And I've seen it happening, and I really wanted to get into the hands of more young men, not just Indigenous men, and families in general, just people. Anyone can learn from these letters, whatever their family position is and whatever gender. There's so much in it.
So you would encourage other fathers to write letters to their sons?
Oh, yeah, and I say that to my son in my letter, that writing is such a wonderful thing to do, to frame things in your own mind, and he does get a bit sick of me every time I see him. I'm asking, you know, are you reading something? You know, because he likes to play, you know, as a lot of young fellas do, play PlayStation, you know, computer games, and I'm in his ear all the time. You know, you should try reading something now and again.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I don't think you're alone there. Certainly not. Same thing going on in my house. So tell me about the beautiful reflections after each letter. Were they written by you or the other men?
I've written all the poetry and the, what do you call them, aphorisms in there. I thought it would be just a nice way to, because the letters can be quite hard-hitting, you know, as you said, lots of tears and emotions, and I thought it would just be a nice way just to pause, you know, and and have something like poetry to reflect, to help people reflect on what's in it. You know, they're all related to fatherhood or culture, all of the poems that I wrote for it, and I think it's a nice touch, yeah.
Oh, it is. It's a beautiful touch. Have you always been a poet?
Only, you know, like when I've been brokenhearted or something, you know, you know, as you do. Yep. When I broke up with the mother of my first three children, I wrote a few poems and but, you know, nothing I'd ever published. And but I thought the other part of writing poetry, I thought, was that it was it's part of breaking the stereotype as well, you know. I think it's partly, well, it is to say to the men that read this book that you can do it, and it's nothing to be ashamed about either. And, you know, this is a powerful way to express our feelings, and also, you know, as I did in the past, to just to vent in a way, you know, to release those emotions in some way.
Yeah, a beautiful way. And a beautiful way to take us to on that journey of what you've learned. And like you said, give us a break for those letters, because they can take some time to absorb. So I think the reflections match perfectly with the letters that you've aligned them with. So well done.
Thank you.
So before we go, I want to talk to you about your tireless work in helping to give voice to First Nations people. Following the Uluru Convention, you were entrusted to carry the sacred canvas of the Uluru Statement of the Heart in an 18-month journey around Australia. Can you tell us about that time? And for those listening at home today who don't know about the Uluru Statement from the Heart, can you tell us a bit more?
Yeah, well, the Uluru Statement, I encourage anyone that hasn't read it to look it up. UluruStatement.com is one of the websites, or fromtheheart.com.au, both campaign websites. Read the statement and learn about it. It's an ongoing campaign. So I'm not talking about something that's relegated to the history books now. It's a campaign that continues to grow even through COVID. Mm-hmm. In the priority call in it is to establish a First Nations voice and enshrine it in the Constitution. And basically what we're talking about there is simply a representative body for First Nation to be able to come together, reach a consensus on what we prioritise, what's common across our, you know, across this great, you know, continent and our different cultures as First Nations, and then be much more effective in how we, you know, influence governments on the decisions that they make and hold them to account when they don't listen to it. You know, so this is a campaign, even through COVID, we had some research recently that showed between March last year and August this year, there's been a rise in support across the general Australian population to 60% of people say they'd vote yes in a referendum. And you've got to remember, I need to let you know that this has been without a really slick, well-resourced campaign. This has been like persons like myself and Professor Megan Davis, Arnie Pat Anderson, Teela Reid, lots of different Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders just doing what they can with what they can scrape together. There's been no funding from government. And also, you know, across the Indigenous population, a 9-point rise to around 80% of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders that support this constitutional change. You know, these are wonderful results. While everybody's worried about COVID and thinking about, you know, everything else, it's any pressure that the listeners can put on to their local politicians. Write a letter to the Prime Minister and, you know, Minister for Indigenous Australians. We have to have a people's movement to be able to get this referendum happening. and we can win it. And it's not only about the voice, it's also about recognition, that our constitution doesn't recognise First Nations people at the moment, Indigenous people, and it's time that we do that.
It sure is. So make sure you head to the website, and they can even simply just sign, can't they? They can sign to say that they support, which is, speaks volumes. So lastly, today, do you have any final thoughts about your amazing book, Dear Son, that we haven't talked about that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I think it's important to talk about how this book is a celebration of Indigenous men. It's a celebration that's important because, you know, we've been taught to hate ourselves, you know, throughout history, and the stereotypes that we need to break about Indigenous men and in particular Indigenous fathers. It goes to what we were taught in school, you know, in my generation, that my forefathers were savages and unintelligent, and you know, the white kids in the same class were taught that their forefathers were scientists and explorers and, you know, all these wonderful things and ultimately our saviours, you know, as these savages on this land. It also goes to the way that the Northern Territory intervention, you know, was basically a prime minister announcing to the country that, you know, we were, as Indigenous men, our children needed protection from us. You know, that pedophilia and domestic violence was an Indigenous issue, you know, it was an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander problem, while certainly today we know that the, you know, the behaviour in Parliament is absolutely disgraceful. You need an intervention in there. And the cartoon that Bill Leake did in 2015 that basically said that men, Aboriginal men, didn't know their children. Yeah. And, you know, this book defies that. You know, my introduction to the book, you know, says that that loving ourselves is an act of defiance. And I think that's something I'd like people to know about this book.
Absolutely. And I had one of the best dads a girl could ask for. And you certainly taught me how to love, and I certainly felt loved. So it is time to break those stereotypes and misconceptions about our beautiful Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander men, because I've only ever known love. So, and it's beautiful to see you write these down, and these amazing 12 men write these down to pass on that love and this wisdom into our next generation and to this generation, and also break down those misconceptions. It has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you for generously sharing your soul with everyone today. And I wish you nothing but the best. So everyone listening today, do yourself a favour. You can head to Readings Bookshop, which is a Melbourne's Writing Festival partner bookshop, and grab yourself a copy of this stunning book, Dear Son, the collection of letters and reflections of 12 beautiful and generous First Nations men, collated and published by Thomas Mayer. So thank you very much today for tuning in and supporting the Melbourne Writers Festival. And thank you very much to you, Thomas.
Thank you, Shelley. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks for listening. To support Melbourne Writers Festival, you can make a donation of any size at mwf.com.au.